Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Scott Burton. It's Thursday, August 23rd, 2018. On today's show, we'll highlight the library and the CBJ Day of Play, service animal training, and a Harry Potter party. We'll learn how to fly fish with the Southeast Alaska Land Trust and Trout Unlimited. Rock or Raising Our Kids with Kindness will outline programs for high school students. We'll get the details on Cancer Connections, Beat the Odds running races on Saturday, and KTOO volunteer Ben Brown will report live from the Alaska State Fair up in Palmer. Those interviews, national native news, bird note music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native language education programs strengthen connections to culture while improving student achievement. Those are some of the benefits discussed during a U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs hearing Wednesday. One of those testifying, Lauren Hummingbird, began at the Cherokee Language Immersion School when she was six. She has since graduated high school at the top of her class and says the school's focus gave her and other students an advantage they would not have had otherwise.
When they come in, they learn Cherokee, they learn the ways of our people, they get a sense of pride, and you can see that when you walk up on them. You won't even know that they know their language, but they have that pride.
The hearing is the first for Jeannie Hovland in her new role as Commissioner of the Administration for Native Americans. The agency oversees Native language preservation programs, among other things. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski urged Hovland not to overlook smaller tribes in the grant process for language immersion and restoration programs. A traditional Supiak artist recently visited Kodiak, Alaska as a guest of the Aleutic Museum, where he talked about his carvings. Daisha Eaton with KMXT has more.
Andrew Obayo hosted an atlatl throwing demonstration at the Aleutic Museum.
The atlatl was used by the Sukhbiak and also the Unangak, actually all the different cultures of Alaska, and primarily it was used in the kayak. And that is actually not an Alaskan native word, it's an Aztec word. For the Sukhbiak, we call it the Nugach. Not too many people were familiar with it, and it's a good way for me to introduce our people to the culture.
Abayo is primarily a wood carver, making masks, weapons, and kayaks. The Aleutic Museum has a pair of Abayo's pieces in their permanent collection, a war shield and a war club. Abayo is part of a new generation of Alaska Native people who are reclaiming and reviving their cultural traditions. He says he didn't grow up with carving, but had always admired it. Then he discovered his talent through a workshop.
I got home one evening, and I got a call from my mom, and she told me that she paid for a workshop for me at the Alaska Native Heritage Center. And you don't want to say no to mom. So I went, and I discovered that I could carve these, and it just comes right out, and it was natural, and so it kind of grew from there.
The workshop, Abayo says, was with his uncle, Peter Lind. Abayo's originally from Pilot Point on the Alaska Peninsula. He says when he's not traveling and teaching, he can be found working on his current project, building a model Anyak, an open skin boat similar to the Umiak, at the Alaska Native Heritage Center in Anchorage. Abayo's visit was supported by a museum initiative to incubate and test innovative approaches to create fun and engaging programming to expand its audience. In Kodiak, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Air quality advisories for Western Washington reservations are expected to be lifted Thursday afternoon. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency this week extended the advisories for the reservations due to smoke from wildfires burning in the state and British Columbia. Residents are also encouraged to reduce sources of air pollutants, such as open burning and idle vehicles. People at risk, including children, elderly, and those with health conditions, are advised to minimize time outside. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is by Odawi Law Group, provider of Indian Law Solutions, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite System.
Support by BNSF Railway, one of the American Indian Science and Engineering Society's top 50 employers. You can join us at the ACES Conference October 4th through the 6th in Oklahoma City. Info at AISES.org.
And by the law offices of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at sanofsky.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, August 23rd, 2018. Scott Burton, your host. Here in the studio with me now is Kate Enge. She is the Grants and Marketing Coordinator at the CBJ Library, and also Julie Copens, a volunteer sometimes here at KTOO and also with Perseverance Theater on staff over there. Julie, thanks for coming on the show. Kate, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Nice to have you both here. Should we start with CBJ Day of Play?
Yeah. The library is participating in the Day of Play this Saturday, and you can stop by the Douglas Library at 1:30, and we'll have some activities for kids, and it will be a lot of fun.
All right. Yeah. Do you know much more? We're going to have someone coming on tomorrow to talk more about the Day of Play. Do you know much more about it?
I don't know that much more about it. Like, tomorrow. I know that we're participating, and like, you can go to, there's various spots around town that you can go at various times, and there's a schedule probably online that you can know where to go. And I just know like the library, the Douglas Library at 1:30.
Sounds good. And get tune in tomorrow to a Juno Afternoon. We'll get more details on that. So what are some of the activities you'll have at the Douglas Library at 1:30 tomorrow?
So I think they're pulling some of the like stuff that we have from the NASA at your library activities, so kids can kind of do some UV lights and kind of learn about like temperatures of the Earth and like various kind of hands-on activities that they can.
And about what ages are those geared towards?
All ages.
Okay. All right. What's next on your calendar?
So next we have a service animal program on Tuesday. I think I called it like almost everything you wanted to know about service animals but were afraid to ask. And it's at 11:30 at the Valley Library on Tuesday. It's in the large conference room, so you can bring your lunch because we know it's kind of over the lunchtime because we want it for people who, businesses, like if you work someplace where, you know, you might have people bringing in service animals or comfort animals, like, and you have some questions about that, you can stop by. Learn what the difference is, what kind of etiquette there are with service animals, and then there will be a Q&A afterwards for everyone.
All right, so that's Tuesday, the 28th, 11:30 at the Mendenhall Valley Library.
Yep.
Do you know who's going to be participating in that?
Yeah, it's SALE. I should have mentioned that. Like,
okay.
I believe somebody from SALE. I think Tristan's coming.
Okay, Southeast Alaska Independent Living.
Yep.
All right. Okay, and just thinking about who that might be geared towards, general members of the public?
Yeah, members of the public, probably older, so adults, like people who might work at various like public-facing offices, like if you ever have come in contact with the public, or you work at a business, like a store, and you might have individuals coming in with a service animal or a comfort animal, and you kind of don't know what laws that affect that, so you don't know the ins and outs, and you want to like learn more.
Okay, so that's Tuesday, 11:30 at the Mendenhall Valley Library. What's next?
Next is we have our toddler times and story times, which went on break this month to kind of finish up the summer reading, and they're back now starting next Monday, so we wanted everybody to know that you can bring your kids, like, 3 and under to toddler time, and they're on Mondays. There's one at the Juno Public Library at 10 in the morning or the Valley Public Library at 11. And then story time, which is kind of ages 3 to 5, there's a story time on Thursdays at the Douglas Library at 11 in the morning, and then one Fridays at the Valley Library at 11 in the morning.
Who are some of your readers for these story times and toddler times?
So these are, it's our lovely youth services department. So like everybody knows like MJ, Amelia, and Sarah. And so they all take turns at each of the different branches to read stories. And they all do an amazing job. Like I'm envious. Like I don't know if I could do it. Like this, they hold those kids' attention. The kids absolutely adore them. They read the stories. I would probably be too worried. I would make somebody cry.
All right. So toddler time, 0 to 3 is every Monday, 10 a.m. at the Juneau Public Library in downtown? Or 11 a.m. in the Valley?
Yep.
Same day, Monday?
Yep, Monday.
Okay, that's toddler time. But a little bit older, 3 to 5 is every Thursday at 11 a.m. at the Douglas Public Library.
Yep.
Or Friday at 11 a.m. in the Valley.
Yes, yep.
All right. Speaking of reading, that's where you come in, Julie, right?
That's right. Well, somehow over the years I've kind of, you asked what my title was. I should have said I'm the Hogwarts Dramatic Society Director. I have assumed that mantle. We did a reading last year on Halloween time of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. This was the big book that came out that's now playing on Broadway. It was a play. It was a new Harry Potter book. What better opportunity to get some great actors together to read? So we did that last October. It was an epic, several nights. It was a huge book. It was a blast. And everyone said, we want to do more of this. So when the library was looking at doing something this fall in connection with The Great American Read, if you're a PBS viewer, you've probably seen and online, they've got this wonderful program going on asking the public to weigh in on what are the great books of, you know, that we Americans enjoy, everything from Twilight to Kill a Mockingbird, you know, classics to Pulp Fiction, everything. Yep. And Harry Potter is, of course, one of these. This is the 20th year since the book's release here in the U.S., the first book, the beginning of the series. And to celebrate that, the library decided we're gonna have a party. And I'm directing one part of the party. And Kate can tell you more about what's going to be going on that day. This is September 1st at the library out in the Valley. In the afternoon, we're doing a short reading, not a whole book. We're going to do chapter 6 from book 1, which is the journey from platform 9 3/4. This is when Harry makes his entree into the wizarding world, and you meet many of his best friends for the first time. References to characters like Dumbledore. You meet Draco Malfoy for the first time. So we're going to have some Perseverance actors, some community members, and volunteers from the audience take part in this reading, and I get to orchestrate it all.
So that's a week from this Saturday, mm-hmm. right? September 1st, and it starts at 2 p.m. at the Mendenhall Valley Library?
Yes, yep.
What else can people expect, Kate?
So we're going to have a bunch of Harry Potter-related activities and snacks, I believe. Our like house elves are working very hard in the back to make it enjoyable for everybody. And I know there's probably going to be something like house-related, like so you can figure out what house you belong in. If you haven't figured that out already, I think everybody should know what house they're in, but
yeah, Scott,
maybe
not. What Hogwarts house are you in?
It's been so long.
Hmm.
I was going to ask you too, though. Do you remember when you first read Harry Potter? Like, how did it come into your lives? It's such a formative book for so many people.
Very much, Kate. Yeah. When did you?
So I remember reading it, like, and I was older than the target audience. It was my first year of college, and I was back home in Petersburg for winter break, and I needed something to do because I had 2 weeks of like unstructured time, and it happened to be on the shelf. I think the second book had just been released, and so I was able to borrow Harry Potter and Sorcerer's Stone from the Petersburg Public Library and read it and returned it, and they're like, oh, you can't read the second one. The Holtz list is too long. And so then I had to come back and, you know, find it here, but it was something I read on Christmas break, and it kind of felt like a nice, you know, nice read, nice Christmas read.
Right. How about you, Julie?
Well, I'm a little older than Kate, and so I was one of those sort of embarrassed adults in line at the bookstore, my head covered. But
this is for my kid.
So I think I just maybe heard about it on NPR. Probably there's this great new book about this boy wizard, and I have always been a fan of juvenile literature and fantasy literature, so picked it up and immediately, of course, was captivated. And I've read through the whole series multiple times. I now have a 13-year-old son, and we have read the books together. And, of course, we have Harry Potter Clue, and we have the Harry Potter Trivia. And we are big Harry Potter geeks from way back. Just this last summer, I went to New York City and planned an entire trip around seeing the Cursed Child play. It was awesome. So
What's so effective about it? Why do people love Harry Potter so much?
Well, don't we all want to think that we're, you know, when we're misunderstood by others, when we're outcast, when we don't quite fit in with our families, the reason is we're magic and we're wizards and we have superpowers and we have we can go to this amazing place and do these amazing things and fight evil and save the world. And we all, of course, this is our story. It's the hero's journey. It's such a classic. The writing is so brilliant. Unlike, you know, other fantasy series, sometimes I kind of roll my eyes at the prose. I'm not a fan of the Twilight series, honestly, and some others. Hunger Games kind of bugs me, but J.K. Rowling is such a master of narrative. She knows how to leave you on a cliffhanger, so you're dying to get into the next chapter, into the next book. The world that she's created is so immersive and so endlessly inventive, and it's so tied in with archetypes and with Latin and with, you know, so it's rooted, similar to the Lord of the Rings series, which is rooted in Norse mythology. It has these foundations that go so deep, and it's such a great entryway to so many other kinds of fantasy literature. It's literally endless. Am I talking too much about
right, right person, right question, right?
But I would say from a theatrical standpoint, actors love this stuff because these characters are larger than life. They are so quirky and fun. And, of course, we all love to do the accents. And it's good and evil, high stakes. You just can't get any better. So I'm expecting some really stellar performances on September 1st.
And
I think
is your cast full?
You know, no, I'm glad you asked. The cast is still coming together. I've got a bunch of volunteers, but I'm still actually needing a few readers. If you are a Harry Potter fan, in particular, I don't have a Hagrid. I don't have a Mr. Dursley. I'm looking for some burly guys who can come and just really take control of these roles. So, of course, we do non-traditional casting as well. So if you're a burly lady and you want to do something, come on. We can definitely use you. So I'm asking people to email me. I've already gotten some volunteers and we're sorting out the roles still. But if you still want to do it, there is room. My email, and I'll go ahead and announce it, is juliec@ptalaska.org. So drop me an email, send me an owl, and we'll get you sorted into this cast. But you can also just show up on the day. We're going to have a goblet of fire. You can put your name in the goblet of fire. We'll pull you out. We'll put you on stage, and you'll read. But if you're the kind of person who likes a little advanced preparation, drop me an owl.
All right. That's Julie Copens. You can contact her at juliec@ptalaska.org.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yep.
To participate in the Harry Potter party Saturday, September 1st, 2 p.m. at the Mendenhall Valley Library. In the meantime, though, starting to Saturday is the day of play at the Douglas Public Library. That's at 1:30. Kate, where's the best place to see this list of events that we've been speaking about?
Well, probably on the Juno.org. is the city website, so there's probably a link on there, and I'm probably tomorrow going to put something on our Facebook, so you can also access that as well, so it's easy for everybody
Juno
to find.
Public Library is Facebook.
Yep.
All right, that's Kate Enge. She is the marketing and grants coordinator at the library, and we are also speaking with Julie Copens, who is what's your title now?
Hogwarts Dramatic Society Director.
I like her title a lot more than mine.
But at Perseverance, I'm the Director of Outreach and Engagement. So it's fun partnering with the library to make cool stuff happen.
Thanks for coming on the show, you two. Is there anything we're missing?
No, I think that's it.
Read a book and go play.
Yeah.
All right. See you later, you two. Thanks.
Thanks, Scott.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Thursday, August 23rd. Just about 20 minutes past the top of the hour. Scott Burton, your host today. Joining me in the studio is Allison Gillum. She's the ED of Southeast Alaska Land Trust. And we're talking about a fly casting workshop that's happening Saturday, August 25th. I keep wanting to think that it's Friday, Allison. I don't know about
you.
From 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. And where's it going to be?
Yeah, so this fly casting workshop is actually the fourth year now that we've done this workshop, and it is being held at one of our properties out North Douglas Highway. It's called the Heiser Fishing Access Site, and it's at about 2.7 miles from the roundabout up North Douglas Highway. And people may be noticing this site right now because it's currently under construction. We purchased this property. It's about a quarter acre. We purchased it for public access and recreation to the Mendenhall Wetland State Game Refuge. I think some people might be surprised to know that the refuge comes down that far. The site's basically located across from the Dipak Hatchery. And so there's a nice view of the hatchery from this site, and also a good reason why it's a good place to go fishing.
All right.
There, so.
Okay, so here we have this fly casting workshop this Saturday on a piece of land that you own that is public access. That's what you're developing it for.
Right.
How does all of this relate to the mission of Southeast Alaska Land Trust?
Yeah, so our general mission is to protect land around Southeast Alaska for different reasons, including recreation, also natural habitat such as salmon streams, wetlands, bird habitat, and then also for cultural or historic reasons we may protect land. And so this property and this workshop fit into that mission in terms of connecting the public to land and to land conservation in the region, and really encouraging people to get outside and enjoy this beautiful place we call home.
Describe the location once more, how to get there.
Yeah, so it's on North Douglas Highway. It's 2.7 miles north of the roundabout. And again, there's some people may have noticed either from North Douglas Highway or across the channel that there's been activity happening on the site. We're developing better parking, and access stairs are going to be installed in the next couple of months down to the beach to give access to the Gastineau Channel and the refuge.
All right. Beyond this project, what's something else we might recognize that you all have been up to in the community?
Yeah, well, so one that a lot of people may be curious about is a project that we're working on, but it's not complete yet. We are under contract with the landowner of the area surrounding what's known as Hansinger Pond near the airport. And so this is, we're working on the intertidal wetland area. It's about 32 acres. So that's a pretty high profile site. It's not the field of fireweed that people so affectionately know. It's actually on the other side of the berm. I think most people don't know that about 32 acres of the wetlands out there, the intertidal area, is actually privately owned and could be developed. So we're working really hard to secure that property and make sure it's not turned into more industrial area in that area.
Thinking about the Southeast Alaska Land Trust, are there any misconceptions or anything that you often have to clear up with people about your mission or anything like that?
I would say sometimes people ask us why. Why do land conservation in an area that's full of wilderness? And I think it's a fair question. And one reason, well, there's many reasons why we feel it's important, but we really focus on areas that are important for, again, recreation, wildlife habitat. We really focus on salmon habitat in particular. And those areas that are in kind of these urban areas like Juneau can be impacted negatively. I guess one thing I want to say is our organization does conserve land and have areas that development is not encouraged, but there are good places for development. And so we're not anti-development. We're not anti-housing or affordable housing. We just really believe there are certain areas that should be protected and shouldn't be developed. So that's what we're all about.
All right, and one of those is this place The at 2.7 mile in North Douglas. What's it called again?
Yeah, so it's the Heiser Fishing Access Site, named after Marjorie and Edgar Heiser, who were two environmental conservationists and recreational enthusiasts that used to be longtime residents here in Juneau.
All right, and you can meet Allison. Will you be there?
I actually won't be there, but there's some other staff at the Land Trust that'll be there, and I guess just a couple things about the actual workshop.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Kevin Meyer, who is on the board of the Juneau chapter of Trout Unlimited, is going to be the instructor. He's excellent. It's $45 per person to register. Again, it's Saturday, August 25th, from 8 to 10 a.m., and there's only two spots left. So if you're interested, go to our website, www.southeastalaskalandtrust.org.
To sign up.
Yeah.
8 a.m. to 10 a.m. And do you know, is this okay for beginners, intermediate?
Yeah, so definitely beginners, intermediate as well. Kevin is an excellent instructor. He teaches a class over at the university. He does private guiding. So I'd say it's appropriate for all levels. And it's going to be low tide during this time, so people be prepared with boots. You definitely want boots. Waders would be preferable, because you'll be heading across kind of some mud flats and really fishing in the channel there at low tide.
And do you need to bring a pole with you?
All of the equipment will be provided.
Okay, except for waders, maybe.
For waders.
So bring your boots and waders.
Yep.
All right, that's Allison Gillum. She's the ED of Southeast Alaska Land Trust. We've been talking about a fly casting workshop this Saturday, August 25th, from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., 2 hours there on Saturday morning at the Heiser Fishing Access Area. It's on North Douglas Highway at 2.7 mile. For more information, go to southeastalaskalandtrust.org. Allison, thanks for coming on the show. Anything else you want to add?
No, that was it. Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, August 23rd, 2018. We're right at the bottom of the hour, and joining me in the studio now is Donnie Burse. She is the youth coordinator over at Zach Gordon Youth Center and also the Year of Kindness for Kids. She's on the Action Committee. Welcome to the show, Donnie. It's nice to have you here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
All right. So Rock Juno, we've heard about it before,
mm-hmm.
Raising our kids with kindness.
Yes.
I think it speaks for itself, but tell us who you are.
Okay, so ROCK, our Raising Our Kids with Kindness this year, we have a special project where we are continuing the Year of Kindness by continuing that with kids. So we are doing a Year of Kindness for Kids. And that is where we partner up and we highlight special places around town. I call them special. Anyone who deals with kids are special.
Mm-hmm.
So we highlight different things around town, different organizations and groups around town who really do special work with our youth. And each month we highlight a different organization or a collective of organizations depending on which kids we're highlighting that month.
Okay, and you were telling me that August was sort of high school or teen month, is that right?
Yes, so Year of Kindness Kids in August, we're focusing on teens. And, we had a great write-up at rockjuno.org, and we highlighted some special organizations and schools even that are doing the important work for our youth. And some of those include the Zach Gordon Youth Center, who is doing the Teen Talk Tuesdays starting in September, and that is peer-led conversations surrounding health, voting, relationships, loving yourself, social media, teen advocacy, and taking a stand. And those are open for all teens, and it's just a really important group to get in and talk about really hard issues that are important to teens.
And peer-led, it sounds like.
Yes, peer-led. So we work with the Teen Council, Sources of Strength Youth, also Zach Gordon Kids, Community Kids, all alike, and they come and they get up these lesson plans and really do the research and share and, you know, their knowledge and lead these really good discussions that sometimes aren't always happening in school.
Sure.
But in a safe environment, it's a beautiful thing.
So those are Tuesdays. What time do those start?
So those are from 6 to 8 on Tuesdays starting in September. Keep your ear to the ground, or to the radio, where we will start showing, there'll be a Teen Talk Tuesday kickoff party. And that date isn't currently set, but it will be in the beginning of September.
What does teen mean these days? What ages would be appropriate to go to that?
So teen, we could stick with 13 once it's there, you know, 13 to 19-year-olds.
All right.
Yeah, I would say that is teenage aged.
All right.
Some other places that we highlighted this year this month is the Teen Health Centers, which are in all of the high schools, and the important work they do providing free health services to students regardless of income. That's so important to have that medical access, and we appreciate the Teen Health Centers. Also, we appreciate and love on JYS, who provide behavioral and mental health services.
And that's Juno Youth Services?
Juno right? Youth Services, chemical dependency. They also have a great program, the Transitional Living Program, that help kids in their transition years, getting set up with home, with housing and jobs and resume building. And then last, we highlighted Sources of Strength, which is at JD and Thunder Mountain. And those are student-centered discussions and groups that focus on climate change, reducing stigma in school, breaking codes of silence. There's a lot of good work going on for teens in this town. It's a great thing to see.
It is. They're such important years.
Yeah, they are. They're very important.
Okay. So that was August, and,
yes.
And Rock, Raising Our Kids with Kindness, is highlighting that. You said there was a great write-up. Where can we see that and get more details on all these programs?
So if you guys want more details on the things we're highlighting, what we've done in the past since January, and what we're going to continue to do until December, you can go to rockjuno.org, and there you can find all the write-ups and newspaper articles, and there's also other information. You can get in contact with the right people if you have ideas or you're interested in donating or volunteering.
And looking forward to September, what's on your calendar?
So for September, we're going to be highlighting kindness for youth with special needs.
Okay. Any ideas what that's going to look like? Or are you still formulating?
You know, we're still formulating, but whatever it is, I promise it will be great and fantastic.
If somebody wants to participate as a volunteer, either working with teens or working with individuals with abilities and disabilities, how can they do that? How can they get in contact with you?
Well, if anyone has questions or needs to get in contact with me, you can call the Zach Gordon Youth Center, which is 586-2635, or you can stop by. We're at 396 Whittier Avenue in the same parking lot as Bullwinkle's and Centennial Hall.
Anything off the top of your mind, a need for a volunteer or any empty seats that need filling?
You know, just off the top of my mind, I like to think the winter months are coming. And so when I think of volunteering and donations, you know, socks, jackets, things that kids will really start to need as we get into these winter months, and also warm meals. So dropping off at the youth center or just check in with the local shelters and just see what you can do.
All right. The number at Zach Gordon again is 586-2635. Is that right?
Yes.
You can speak with Donnie Burris here. She is the youth coordinator over there, and she's also on the Action Committee for a Year of Kindness for Kids. Donnie, it's been great having you on the show. What's the website once more?
So rockjuno.org.
All right. Donnie, anything else we're missing? Anything you want to add?
Oh, no. Thank you for having me today. Have a great one.
Mm-hmm.
Brewfest is coming. KXLL is proud to sponsor the Rotary Club of Juneau's 7th annual Capital Brewfest, Saturday, September 22nd, from noon to 5 at the Jack. Come and enjoy a large selection of great beer, live music, and fantastic food. All proceeds support the Bartlett Regional Hospital Foundation and the humanitarian projects of Juneau Rotary. Tickets are limited and will sell out, so don't wait. Tickets now available online only at capbrewfest.com. This message brought to you by the Rotary Club of Juneau.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Thursday, August 23rd, 2018. Scott Burton, your host. It's about, 18 minutes until the top of the hour. In the studio with me now is Emily Ricci and Kim Mosseth. We're going to be talking about Beat the Odds, a race against cancer this Saturday. It's a 5K and a 2-mile walk that kick off from Riverbend School at 9 a.m. Both Emily and Kim here are on the board of Cancer Connection. Emily is a board member and a cancer survivor. Kim is a board member extraordinaire, according to Emily. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
It's nice to have you here. So Cancer Connection, I noticed this is the 27th annual Beat the Odds race. How long has Cancer Connection been around in Alaska? Do you happen to know? At least 27 years, right?
No, you know, Cancer Connection wasn't actually the initial sponsor of the race. I think the race was started by a woman named Kathy Brissett about 27 years ago, and she's still very active in the community. I actually went to high school with her daughter.
Oh, wow.
She was in my grade. So it really is kind of a grassroots organization that was founded and developed by community members that were facing cancer or impacted by cancer in some way. I don't remember when exactly Cancer Connection inherited the race. But it's been a really important aspect of the programming that the organization is involved in.
Okay. And Emily, you said that you are a survivor. When you were fighting cancer, was Cancer Connection supportive of that? Were they part of your battle, or have you seen how they participate with survivors?
Absolutely. I was diagnosed with cancer when I was 31 years old, and it was a very isolating feeling at the time. I didn't really know anyone else that was similar to me in age, or had been through a similar diagnosis. There weren't a lot of my peers that I could turn to. And I called up Cancer Connection one afternoon when I really just needed some more information and some support. And they put me in contact with someone that had had a similar diagnosis at a similar point in time. And we're still kicking butt, 20 years later. And ever since then, it's just been a tremendous organization to be involved with. And actually, the first time I ever did Beat the Odds, I ran the 5K, I want to say about 2 weeks after finishing chemo and radiation. And that was really challenging for me because prior to treatment, I had been able to do that. And it was really important to me to see if I could do that again. And I think I was like dead last, but I did it. So it's every year I kind of think back to that moment.
Wow. Kim, can you tell us about your participation with Cancer Connections?
Yeah, sure. I've been on the board for approximately 2 years. I have many friends and families that have been affected by cancer, so it's important to me that we have a good local organization that will provide support and resources for those and their families as well affected by cancer.
Can you give us, I think Emily just outlined a few of those resources, but tell us more about what Cancer Connection can provide for a person in the community.
Yeah, sure. Like Emily stated that she was connected with somebody to talk to. We have a weekly support group where cancer survivors can come and talk about their experiences, whether it's a fresh one or we have survivors that attend that have
like been in remission?
Yeah, been in remission for quite a while. So we also provide travel assistance to members of Southeast Alaska that need to travel outside of their community to receive cancer treatment. And we also have an apartment in the Seattle area that is available at quite a bit of a reduced rate than one would have to pay at a hotel. And we also provide
We do some limited counseling provide some limited funding for counseling in certain circumstances when individuals need that for them or their family.
When you called, Emily, who did you talk to? I mean, we don't need names, but was it counseling or just connections that you got or advice?
You know, it was actually another board member that had had same diagnosis within the same, you know, age range as me. And it was really great to talk with her because we could immediately get into the details, and every diagnosis is so different. So we could get into the details of the stage and the histology and what doctors I was seeing and where and what they were recommending. And even though the treatment has changed fairly significantly over that period of time, it is so empowering to talk to someone who's been through it and is, you know, happy, healthy, and living a fulfilled life decades later.
So Cancer Connection are you a nonprofit?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or do you know about how many, let's see, you probably have a board, and how many people seem to be affiliated with this organization, would you say, in Juneau?
Oh, man, it seems like everywhere you go, you run into someone that has either themselves or someone they know or are close to has been touched by cancer, has in some way been associated with the organization. And what I think is so special about Cancer Connection is that it is a local grassroots organization. I mean, it started by locals. Everything we do is really focused on Juneau and Southeast Alaska, and we will receive donations from individuals that on their own have gone and done small fundraisers or large fundraisers, and you never hear about it. They don't necessarily advertise it in the community, but we get reports of that, you know, every 1 or 2 months, and to me, that's a tremendous indication of how important this organization is to Juneau when people are going out on their own fundraising for us, and telling us after the fact. So I think it's a tremendous community organization.
And as you mentioned, the apartment in Seattle, travel assistance, other resources, these probably take funds to support. These do take funds to support. And tomorrow's that is Beat the Odds, sort of a flagship fundraiser for the organization?
Yeah, Beat the Odds, which is actually on Saturday, is our main fundraiser, annual fundraiser.
All right. And so 9 o'clock, there's a 5K run and a 2-mile walk. I imagine you can be serious and run the 5K or just go to have fun.
Yeah, definitely. All levels are welcome to join us. And the 5K race is actually part of the NAO series, so members of the Juneau Trail and Roadrunners group can collect points for that. So it is a timed event. You don't have to be timed if you don't want to. We don't time the walkers. And if you haven't signed, if you haven't pre-registered, registration will be accepted starting at 8 o'clock in the covered playground at the Riverbend School.
If somebody hasn't been to Riverbend before, how would you describe where that is?
Well, this is Emily. I think about the old JRC or the Alaska Club in the valley. And if you're kind of driving down Riverside, you would want to take a left where the pool is. Mm. And then take kind of slightly before that, there's a turn into the elementary school there. And one of the things I really love about this event is that there's a bunch of door prizes at the end. We have a great list of sponsors that have been very important to make this event happen: Bartlett Regional Hospital, Juneau Obstetrics and Gynecology, Radio Centers, Solarad LLC, Southeast Radiation Oncology, Valley Medical. There's a ton of sponsors: Alaska Outdoor Warehouse and Embroidery and Anchor Electric, and just to name a few. So there's some great door prizes that are given out at the end. And then we also have a table where you can write down the name of someone that has faced cancer, and you can kind of pin it to your shirt and walk with them thinking of their name. One of our major sponsors as well is Alaska Airlines and Wells Fargo. And so this event is made possible through all of our sponsors.
Okay. If people want more information on how to get in on this race on Saturday, how can they do that?
They can go to our website at cancerconnectionak.org or call us at 790-2273.
Okay. Well, it's been nice talking to both of you. You know, I just noticed on your On your flyer, it says 796-2273.
Oh, thank you.
That's
thank
okay.
you so much.
I do that all the time, too. All right. It's been nice talking to both of you, Emily Ricci and Kim Mosseth. They will be running or walking, probably, in Beat the Odds race this Saturday morning. Registration starts at 8 a.m. It's at Riverbend School. There's a 5K and a 2-mile walk. For more information, call 796-2273. Or go to cancerconnectionak.org. Thanks for coming on the show, you two. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, we're just really excited to see everybody out here on Saturday. One of our speakers this year is going to be Julie Hamilton. She's a survivor, so come out, have some fun for a very good cause.
Thanks, you both. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. A 16-inch pileated woodpecker is hammering its massive chisel of a bill against a cedar trunk, making large rectangular incisions, some nearly a foot long. This carpenter seeks out another. Within the trunk swarm many thousands of carpenter ants. The half-inch-long black ants have themselves excavated a nesting colony in the heart of the living tree. The woodpecker's sticky tongue reaches 5 inches beyond the tip of the bill into the trunk, lapping up hundreds of ants. More than half of the pileated's entire food intake may be ants. Woodpeckers as a group eat far more ants than do most birds, swallowing them whole. Many other vertebrates studiously avoid ants because of their stings or noxious chemical deterrents, like formic acid. Another member of the woodpecker family, the northern flicker, is known to have ingested over 5,000 ants in one sitting. While the pileated woodpecker and northern flicker also eat a variety of other insects and berries, they always love to have a good supply of ants. I'm Michael Stein.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, August 23rd, 2018, about 6 minutes till the top of the hour. And if I did it right, volunteer Ben Brown should be on the line with us from the Alaska State Fair up in Palmer. Are you there, Ben?
Yes, I am. I'm here at the Juno booth in the Raven Hall at the fairgrounds, and we're having a great time. I've been talking to people about what a great capital city Juno is all day, and it's raining outside, so a lot of them are happy to be inside.
What else is, so let's see, today is the first day of the fair. What's it go for, a week and a half, something like that?
Yeah, it runs through Labor Day. Today's the first day at the fair, and I sent you some photos earlier, so it's good to come early because all the vegetables and mushrooms and flowers are nice and fresh with their award-winning prize ribbons on them.
Yeah, so listeners, you can go to KTOO's Facebook page right now. Ben sent me a picture of a rutabaga. How many pounds did that thing weigh?
I don't remember off the top of my head, but more than you could eat at one sitting.
I think it was like 32 pounds, but
it was. It was pretty darn big.
And some cabbages and a really cute cow. That's on our Facebook page. And what was that other critter? That black and white critter. What was that?
I think that I sent you a picture of a goat, but there was also a really adorable picture of a pig. So there's every kind of farm critter you can imagine here at the fair, and all sorts of people and activities, and it's just been a really nice day so far, I have to say.
What hat are you wearing right now, Ben?
Well, I'm actually here as a volunteer for the Juno Chamber of Commerce, on whose board of directors I serve, and Travel Juno and the Alaska Committee, which for many years has put on this Juno booth. We stopped doing it a few years ago. But we decided now was a good time to make sure that we were getting the word out to people that Juno is a great capital city and will remain a great capital city in perpetuity, and that we do everything we can to make it accessible. Obviously, Gavel, Alaska is one of the things that KTOO does to help make sure people can access the governmental process. Our friends at the Legislative Affairs Agency have just incorporated so much technology in allowing people to testify at committee hearings from LIOs or from off-net or by Skype from their computers. So people have been very responsive. People have been really happy all day. I've been giving out candy. We have a couple of Alaska Airlines tickets we're going to do a drawing for at the end of the fair. People can sign up for free for those. And so many folks come and either say, I love Juno. I wish I could go back. Or they say, I've never been there, and I really want to go. So we just want to make ourselves as accessible and available as possible.
Any idea how long the fair's been going on?
Oh, the fair started back in 1936 when there was a colony of farmers during the Great Depression.
Wow.
And it went up through the war, and like many things, it went on hiatus during the Second World War. But then it picked up again in the 50s, and it was in the mid-50s that the folks out here decided to petition the territorial legislature and have it designated as a territorial fair. And then the moment we became a state, obviously it transitioned to the state fair, and that was a special one because President Kennedy actually was here at the fairgrounds in 1960.
Wow. What's your...
But since then, it's just getting stronger and bigger and better every year.
What is your favorite, what do you look forward to most about the fair, Ben?
I'm from up here. I was born in Anchorage and went to high school in Palmer, so I see a lot of people that I know, which I enjoy. But really, I think one of the most fun places is the Sluice Box, which is the beer hall, and there's a lot of great live music there. Hobo Jim, Alaska's balladeer from Homer, plays every year. But I have a lot of friends who are in various bands and stuff. So I would have to say, you know, the interesting fried food, the giant vegetables, the adorable farm animals, they're all great. But having a good time in the Sluice Box is probably about as good as it gets.
All right, Ben, well, we have about 30 seconds left here with the show. I appreciate you reporting here for a Juno afternoon. And thanks for all the hosting that you do here on a Juno afternoon as well. Any last thoughts from the fair? It's about 56 degrees and overcast, maybe with light rain here. What's it doing there?
It's about 55 degrees and pretty heavy rain here. So actually one fellow came by and said, did you bring the weather from Juno? And I said, I can neither confirm nor deny that. It needs to rain some of the time everywhere in Alaska. So, no, it's a great time up here, and I will look forward to getting back to Juno this weekend and seeing folks back in the Capital City next week.
From the Alaska State Fair in Palmer, that's Ben Brown. See some pictures he took at our KTOO Facebook page. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno afternoon. Take care, Ben.
Okay, thanks, Scott. Bye now.